To another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. This is your host, Marshall.
And this is Jennifer.
This is Michael.
And we are currently the Agnostic Salvation Hour. Cole is still kind of in the Skype Stone Age. He still cannot figure out how to use Skype on his computer.
Okay.
So, all right. Anyway, how's everybody enjoying the heat? Here in Kansas, it's in the hundreds here on a regular basis.
Yeah, it wasn't. They predicted a real hot week up here, but today, I mean, it was. I don't know. I think it was just in the upper 80s today, so I didn't think it was that bad.
Oh,
and I'm always stuck in an office, and I'm always cold when I'm inside. So.
Well, the air conditioning in my car is pooped out. So I got to get the, I hope it's just Freon. Hopefully just adding some Freon for about $100 and I'll be fine. Otherwise it's going to be a long summer for me.
Your car will be a sauna.
Oh my God. Yes. So, anyway, no big news here in the Kansas City area outside of the intense heat, which most of the Midwest and South is feeling right now. And, I don't really have any major announcements. Jennifer or Michael, did you?
Not really. Last week, I had a spirited but pleasant discussion with a very intellectual and philosophical Christian apologist. Sure, I'll call him a Christian apologist. And the guy was a brilliant guy. I mean, much smarter than I am, which just frustrated me because he was defending something so infantile as the belief of biblical inerrancy. It's just, it boggles my mind that brilliant people defend such infantile doctrines. I just purchased a book called The End of Christianity, edited by John Loftus, who he's in charge of the website debunkingchristianity.blogspot.com, and he talked about Christian apologists in there, and they said that he came up with a motto. You know, he's thinking of people like William Lane Craig, and the motto was Christianity, making brilliant people look stupid.
You know, and I think what their goal is with those arguments, often, like you said, just silly arguments defending inerrancy, which I don't think William Lane Craig necessarily is an inerrantist.
Right.
But those who are, I think the goal isn't to convert people to Christianity. It's to give Christians who have heard the contradictions of the Bible an excuse to ignore them.
Right. Yeah.
Because I just don't know how anyone who wasn't a Christian already could hear some of those arguments. But anyway.
I guess if somebody's extremely gullible, like they don't know what they believe, and then somebody comes along and says, well, read this, and then they ask questions, and they have the shiny answers for everything.
Yeah.
And if you don't think too hard, they might sound good. But once you actually start thinking about it, it falls apart.
Exactly. And I agree. But I do think their main goal is to keep as many people in the flock as they can.
Right.
Because of the really strong evidence, at least what I view as really strong evidence against Christianity.
Sure.
And in fact, I believe that Michael and I are going to record an episode where we discuss the Gary Habermas and Michael Okona's minimal facts approach to the resurrection.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's actually a favorite topic of mine. But that won't be this episode. We're just going to talk the news here. And speaking of the news, although I think this is, by the time we're recording this, it's kind of settled down, or hopefully it's settling down. There was what's being dubbed Elevator Gate, apparently in Ireland during the internet. What was it? The International Atheist Alliance? Is that what it's called?
I think so. Yeah.
I think that's what they're called. Well, anyway, Rebecca Watson makes this video in which she basically talked about what she talked about at the at that particular meeting, and she said most people got it, most people were supportive of it, but she was offended by an individual who at 4 a.m. confronted her in an elevator and asked her to his room, his hotel room. And all hell broke loose after that point, which I think, personally, I don't get it. It's, to me, sounds like a perfectly innocent statement. Well, it wasn't a statement, well, and I don't have the quote in front of me.
Statement by Dawkins? Yeah.
I haven't even gotten to Dawkins yet.
Okay. Yeah, okay, well, I think it's important to say too that she gave a talk at the convention earlier in the day in which Dawkins was actually on the panel, mm-hmm. talking about sexism and atheism and how, how you know she as an outspoken atheist feminist has been not only put down because she is a woman by atheists but also threatened by Christians who with not just you know death threats like a lot of high you know outspoken atheists get, but also with you should be raped and all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and she made a big deal about saying you know we need you know if we in the atheist you know communities want to encourage women to join and be outspoken that we have to be supportive and we have to you know all this you know basically saying hey guys you know treat us like equals.
Exactly.
And she went out drinking with a bunch of people at the convention, had you know was having good discussions, decided at 4 a.m. to go back to her room, you know. And I'm not saying that the guy who did this was like following her or anything like that, but he had been at the convention, he had heard this talk, and then propositions her at 4 a.m. come back to my room for coffee so we can mm-hmm. continue the discussion. And she didn't even say that he was, it necessarily offended her. She just thought it, she just kind of felt creeped out by it.
Yeah.
And
which I think is a normal woman's attitude towards something like, yeah,
sure.
she is not unique in her kind of, you know, being put off by that. I think most women would.
Right.
Right. Right.
I don't know. And again, I'm not saying that this guy had evil intentions as well, but something that bothers me a little bit, you know, propositioning a girl to come up to your hotel room at 4 a.m. I just think that confirms the negative stereotype that believers have of atheists as people who just do what they want and don't give a shit. I mean, I'm not a prude by any means. I'm no one to judge. I just kind of a feeling I have. I'm being too prudish. What do you guys think?
And I don't think. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I mean, anybody that's listened to this podcast knows that I don't think any of us that have been on this podcast are anywhere near being prudes. But I would certainly feel uncomfortable and offended if a man that I had never met in my entire life propositioned me to go to his room at 4 a.m.
Sure.
I would maybe not be offended, but I would be rather uncomfortable with the situation.
And let's examine the situation a little bit further. This was she spent about 30, 45 seconds on a short video mentioning this. This wasn't intended as a broad condemnation of all male skeptics or free thinkers. This was just a pointed criticism of this individual. Whoever he was, nobody knows who this guy is.
Right.
He knows, I'm sure, but no one else knows. And I'm sure, I don't know if he goes around talking about it. He made a bad decision. He creeped her out, understandably. She's not saying that he should have gone to jail or shame on skepticism or anything like that. That's really all it was, is this just this one guy really was not paying attention to my speech, which I agree. And let's not forget, in her speech, she says that she routinely gets these very graphically sexual emails from fans describing how they want to rape her.
Not rape her, but just their graphic fantasies on what they would like to do to her sexually, but not necessarily rape, saying if it's a consensual thing, but still creepy. I'm sorry. That's creepy.
See, that
creepy
shit like that. The free thinking community does not need shit like that. That just confirms the worst. As I said, I don't mean to repeat myself, but that really does confirm the worst stereotypes that theists have of non-believers.
Yes, and yeah. And in fairness, you see the same thing for Christians. I don't think anyone can argue that skeptics are any worse in this regard than non-skeptics. But still, that's all she was saying.
Sure.
Is this stuff does go on. There is sexism within this movement. We need to take it seriously because it is a problem.
Right.
And it's driving women away from the movement.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I agree. And I don't think anyone is saying that, you know, some of our meetup groups shouldn't be viewed as an opportunity for single men to possibly find other single partners or vice versa. You know, in a normal, civil, non-creepy or threatening manner. You know, we go out, our groups go out drinking all the time. If a guy and a gal hit it off and the guy ends up asking her out or something like that, that's normal.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Absolutely normal. Actually, one of the reasons that some people actually attend these functions is they don't want to end up marrying a Christian or a theist. And the only option they have is to go to these meetups, and that's normal. Nobody is saying that that's unacceptable. But the negative reaction to what Rebecca Watson had to say was essentially that she was condemning all attempts at flirtation and just very vulgar, and I just don't understand it.
Well, it was suggesting that how she should have felt in that situation. She should have felt flattered. And I'm like, you know what? You cannot say to somebody how they should feel about any given situation.
Well, yeah. And coming, well, go ahead.
Or that if we're truly equal, women should be able to proposition men in elevators too at 4 o'clock in the morning, and we won't take offense. And I'm like, yeah. You're a man.
You're yes. Here's the deal. A man, if I'm in an elevator and that happens, I probably don't have anything to worry about. I probably don't have any real reason to think this woman might just end up raping me. That's probably not a big issue.
Right.
Or this, I'm going to go to this woman's room and she's going to drug me.
Right.
Doesn't happen to men all that often. Happens to a lot of women.
Right.
It's a very different experience, and to judge her for failing to respond to the situation like a man would have is really, really ultimately at the heart of what she was talking about.
Right.
Is that women and men are different, and that has to be understood. There are, women are more vulnerable to those things I was just mentioning than men will ever be.
Yeah.
And as much as we like to be equal, I mean, women just in general are smaller in stature and not going to be as strong as a male and can be easily overpowered. And, you know, so we have to be on the lookout. Or like I've had some friends that have gone out to bars and had guys buy them drinks and they get roofied. I mean, you know, we have to watch out for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, now we have not discussed specifically what Richard Dawkins said about this incident, or have we?
No, we haven't.
Okay. Yeah.
And what
That's
did he
where
say?
It really all exploded.
Yeah, right. It was such a bizarre decision. Well, does anyone have a synopsis of what he said?
I am pulling up exactly what he posted on Ferengula, which is PZ Meyer's blog. He posted something about the whole thing about her getting propositioned and basically kind of saying, guys, we need to, you know, you need to think about what you're doing before you do this stuff, because that's not cool, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And his post was, do you want me to read the thing
if you wanted to summarize it or read the whole thing?
Well, I can just summarize it, and maybe we can put like a link or something up in the show notes.
Okay.
If people want to read, because I've got the links. Basically, Richard Dawkins sarcastically compared her plight to that of Muslim women who have to deal with female circumcision and oppression and stoning and stuff like that by the men in their societies, and basically saying that what happened to Rebecca is a non-issue. And he, that was his first post, but he posted a second time because there were a lot of people who basically called him out and said, hey, that's not cool. You're being extremely insensitive. And he basically said Rebecca's bad, the quote unquote bad thing that happened to Rebecca wasn't actually a bad thing, that nothing bad or wrong happened to her.
Or that she wasn't a victim, is what I think.
She wasn't a victim. And furthermore, that she could have taken herself out of the situation very easily by stopping the elevator and walking out.
Yeah.
To a guy, absolutely. You can stop that elevator and you can walk off of it. And I'm not saying that she couldn't have done the same thing. If she really felt that uncomfortable, she probably could have stopped the elevator and gotten right off.
Yeah.
Because I don't think – I'm stressing. I don't think the guy that said this stuff to her had any intent of raping her or anything that. Right. But, you know, there was another – there was a blog that I found that highlighted a case, I think it was in New York, of a woman who was in an elevator with a man – who overpowered her, pulled her into a room, and raped her.
Yeah, it happens.
Right.
It happens,
well,
you know.
Yeah. At, you know, my alma mater, KU, one of their most valuable players, Sharon Collins, I don't know if you guys are basketball fans, but he faced a misdemeanor charge. He was accused of rubbing his genitals against a girl in an elevator. So this
– Wait, what's wrong with that?
Right.
You're taking things. No, I'm kidding. It wasn't 4 a.m.
Right. Yeah.
No, but, I'm just kidding.
You know,
no,
I'm
it
just,
was at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so it was okay.
Yeah.
But I just want to say a few things. They're not profound. They're simple, but very true. You know, first, I'm not that big of a fan of Richard Dawkins. In all fairness, I have never read his book, The God Delusion. I've seen him speak, but. I mean, I think he's obviously an authority on scientific issues, but I'm not so sure he's an authority. He's the authority he presents himself to be on religion in general and Christianity in particular. I don't get the impression he knows much about Christianity and the formation of the Bible and the early church yet. As I said, he presents himself as an authority on a variety of religious issues, and I don't know if that's accurate. And two, I mean, his quote, you know, is proof that no group of people has the monopoly on assholes. I mean, I've met, as far as evangelical fundamentalist Christians go, I mean, I think their beliefs are ridiculous, but you know, I've met wonderful people who are evangelical fundamentalist Christians who are my friends to this day, and then I've met unbelievers who are total assholes, and you know, and vice versa. So it just goes to show, I mean, people are people no matter what belief system they adhere to or whether they're unbelievers or whatever.
Yeah. And I kind of agree with what you said about Richard Dawkins. I never considered him the first person I turned to as, you know, to debunk a piece of Christian apologetics or anything like that. But he has done a lot for the cause, and I respect him for that, for atheism and its inclusion within society. I respect him for that, but I mean, my respect for him has gone down a notch because there was absolutely no reason for him to chime in on this. It was such a minor issue. This wasn't an issue that really required his attention.
Now the thing is within the community, it's caused a lot of people to start, you know, like choosing a side, like people who are going to boycott Richard Dawkins, which is, in my viewpoint, kind of terrible. It's like, okay, so we know that when it comes to, you know, these kinds of issues, he's kind of thick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's really, really unfortunate. But the science that he does, I don't want to see anybody like boycotting his wonderful talks, because I've seen him speak too. And one of the talk that I saw him speak on was how evolution basically influences our behavior. And I think he's kind of brilliant when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But I totally agree that when it comes to, because I have read The God Delusion. And there are lots of things I agree with them on and lots of things I'm like, nah, I don't think you quite got it here. You know, I agree that he's not the authority when it comes to non-belief, but he definitely is important when it comes to the scientific facts. So I'm not prepared necessarily to throw him completely under the bus just to say, I think you need to rethink, you know, the what you have said, and maybe try to look at it from a different perspective. And I think that's what he's failing to do.
Yeah, and this whole thing is really learned or taught us that a lot of people just do not have the ability to take things, keep it in perspective. Because right. This really was such a minor thing. And it resulted in, I mean, I've seen some of the emails that Rebecca Watson has gotten, and I've seen some of the comments on various blogs. There was just so much hatred that erupted from this. And it was just so bizarre to me that, I was a little frightened about what was going on. And it made it clear to me that within the skeptic community, within the free thinker community, there are still some social misfits out there who really, really do not understand women. Not that I necessarily do, but don't understand them at all. And,
right. And, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, if our attitude should not be, well, they should just, we don't mind. We men don't mind. So if women don't mind, I mean, if they do mind, fuck them. I mean, that's the wrong attitude. And that's part of the reason why they're not showing up.
Right. And speaking as a woman, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's really, okay, I won't say it's always super easy to tell, but it's pretty easy to tell when you talk to a girl whether or not she's into you or not.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think I had, I can't remember who I was discussing it with, but I even had this discussion. I think it was actually Cole. Where we were talking about, if you really think that a chick is flirting with you and you're not sure, just be open and blunt and just say, are you flirting with me? Do you like me? Because I kind of like you, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, and,
good
and
idea.
But don't be creepy about it. Don't do it at 4 a.m. in an elevator. You know, if you're standing around over drinks or, you know, there you go. Go to a few events, and if you see the same person there and you keep having good conversations, you know, ask them out for coffee sometime. You know, I mean, there's lots of ways that you can approach women that isn't going to be offensive, that isn't. But, you know, and I will say I've even had, not necessarily with the groups here in Kansas City, but when I've been out of town, I've actually had a couple men assume that because I'm an atheist and a female, that I am very sexually liberal, and I actually have been asked about one night stands and stuff like that. And I didn't necessarily take offense to it because I'm not easily offended, but I can totally see how a lot of women would be like, wow, that's, and even for me, I'm like, that's not my thing. And I was totally fine with saying, I'm pretty open sexually, but I'm not going to go hop into bed with somebody that I just met. Thanks. Exactly. You know, I mean, but it is kind of a, you need to stop and think about what you're saying to a woman you've just met.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't glean from the conversation that's the way it's going, you know, then I don't, and I know that can be kind of difficult because some women are totally cool with having a one night stand. So I understand how it can be confusing, but I think at one point or another, you just got to say, this conversation's going really well. What are you thinking? What do you think of me? You know, I mean, just be open and blunt about it, and maybe that'll cut down on some confusion.
And, you know, an elevator guy just made a bad decision. You know, it could have been, she just did the video, and that could have been the end of it. I from that video, I don't see how this ballooned into such a bizarre controversy. Of course, then once you get Richard Dawkins commenting, they had no, there was no hope for it not to, but anyway, all right. Well we had our set. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, and sadly, this isn't the first incident. I mean, there have been other incidents of sexism in the atheist movement. I cannot recall the actual convention it was at, but it was a few months ago where a woman stand up and asked a question about sexism in atheism, and she was basically heckled, and basically. She ended up leaving the convention because she was so upset. And I was, and I believe there were a bunch of women then saying, if you want women in the atheist movement, this is not how you do it. Yeah. And, you know, Greta Christina had a big post on this whole debacle and just, you know, sexism and atheism in general. And I do think it is funny. And I think that a lot of guys need to hear this. We are trying to get you laid. If you want to talk to these things and you're trying to, you know, meet women, if you can do it in a respectful manner and learn how to learn a little bit of social skills, you'll probably, you know, you might, I won't say you will, but you have a higher chance of meeting someone that you might click with and end up having a relationship with that you wouldn't have met otherwise. But you just have to, you know, be gentleman about it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, One quick thing I want to say before we move on. I mean, I know I'm just preaching to the choir here, but as statistics have shown, religion in this country, and from my own personal experience, I've seen that religion tends to be a female-oriented industry despite its misogynistic rules. Mm-hmm. I mean, most churches in this country tend to have a higher number of females than males. I mean, a popular discussion is, are females more religious than males? If so, why? Is that how their brain works? I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying I know the answer to that. But this is things like this, the incident you just described, Jennifer, and then this incident with Dawkins, this is not the way to draw women from religion in particular.
No. And this becomes fodder for, like you said, the people who want to think of atheists as these obnoxious ogres. This is, you know, I'm sure this stuff will be brought up on a regular basis,
right?
Is unfortunate because, as you mentioned, churches are Christian churches and certainly Islamic churches tend to be
mosques. Yeah.
Their mosques tend to be have built into their rules from some pretty severe anti-feminist notions.
Sure.
Anti-female concepts.
Yeah, which is mistaken for respect, which it's not.
Right.
No, it's not. It is absolutely not. It's not respect. It's bizarre to me. But yeah, but like you mentioned, women really do outnumber men in church attendance. And that's always kind of baffled me too, but we're not going to figure that one out here. So, all right, let's move on to one of my least favorite topics. The Tea Party, which has been, as the election ramps up, the Tea Party is getting a lot of attention because there are a lot of potential candidates looking to be our next president who claim to be members of the Tea Party. Prominent among those individuals are Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry, who most people think is going to throw his hat into the ring here pretty soon. And one other major candidate, I cannot remember who. Republican, obviously. But anyway. Well, speaking of Rick Perry, what I wanted to mention is he has coming up pretty soon this prayer rally.
The response,
which is going to be a summoning of Christians throughout the country, particularly governors, apparently, to, through prayer, solve this country's problems, which is so stupid to me.
Could you imagine if you took that approach to flying a 747 over the Atlantic Ocean? We're going to let Jesus take control. See how far that gets you.
Or like I say, if a Christian is having a heart attack, and you go up to him and says, "Do you want me to call 911 or do you want me to pray?" 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, he's going to say, "Call 911. And I mean, they know the true value of prayer. I know that because whenever it really counts, they don't rely on prayer.
Right.
Ever. I'm going to let God drive the car for a while. Or, you know, they never rely on prayer to get things done.
Right.
But here we got somebody who could be our next president claiming that he potentially could solve this country's problems through prayer in Houston, Texas, at the, I forgot what the building is called, but even though the concept is absurd to me, particularly when you consider how hard the predominantly Christian parts of this country have been hit by natural disasters recently.
Sure.
And when you view the area with the largest number of Christians in the world, sub-Saharan Africa, is also the area with the lowest life expectancy, highest crime, worst economy, worst everything.
Yeah.
There, and I guarantee you, there is more praying going on in Africa than you'll find any other place in the world.
Yeah.
It's clearly not working.
Right.
Yeah.
But these people are spending literally millions of dollars to throw this event. And part of me really wonders if even they believe it's going to work.
Yeah. Marshall, and it's coming from someone who's spent over a decade as an evangelical fundamentalist Christian, I have the mindset a lot of the time, and lot of my fellow co-religionists had this same mindset. We were almost taught to think of poverty as a blessing, because if we had too many of the world's riches, we would think we didn't need to rely on God. So this mindset, I mean, it can be appealing to those who have an evangelical fundamentalist mindset. I mean, I'm not saying that people who are in poverty can't be happy, but you're almost taught to think of poverty as a blessing from God in order to keep you humble.
Mm-hmm. Because with poverty, you can't afford a fancy education.
Right.
Is basically what it comes down to. And I remember thinking that same way as a Catholic, and how arrogant the people with educations were for daring to think that there wasn't a God. And thank God I wasn't going to be as educated as they are. I remember thinking along those lines. But I don't know if I ever actually thought that prayer was a substitute for action, even as a devout Catholic.
And same as a fundamentalist, which I was. I mean, I was a man of prayer, but when it came right down to it, I won't admit it, but I knew prayer didn't do shit. I had to
exactly, and I kind of knew the same thing, because and from a logical perspective, I thought, you know, God didn't put us down here so we could spend all our time praying. He wanted us to figure out our own problems and take care of them. That was my belief.
Well, isn't there something that some religious person said that he does for those who do for themselves?
God,
basically,
God helps those who help themselves. Yeah. Now, that's not in the Bible. And I used to, when I would ever I would hear that as a Christian, I would remind people, "Hey, that's not in the Bible." However, I mean, it's a stupid saying, but it makes a lot more sense to just pray about it and see what God does.
Well, right. Or you work, you produce the results. And then you thank God. Right. So it's kind of the opposite of prayer. It's thanking God for things he had nothing to do with.
Right.
But having said this about the absurdity of prayer and the absurdity of viewing it as a substitute for action, people, including politicians, have the right to get together and pray. And I don't think that's necessarily the concern that anyone has about what's going to be happening with the response. My concern is some of the individuals who are sponsoring this event, like we've talked about this guy, Brian Fisher. I forgot the name of the organization. He's
American Family Association.
The American Family Association. This guy is an evil, evil human being. He has said, well, we talked about him last show, where he was saying that we should be invading Islamic nations and forcing people to convert to Christianity. That is literally his attitude. He also said that Hitler, that the SS was composed entirely of homosexuals because Adolf Hitler knew that gay people would be more ruthless and evil than the heterosexuals in his army. I mean, this guy is an evil, despicable human being, and he is the main funder of this event, and that's why I'm terrified.
Right. I mean, yeah. They also have some, in addition to being sponsored by, you know, the American Family Association, Fisher, they have some questionable characters associated with the movement within evangelicalism called the New Apostolic Reformation. These people, they see themselves as modern day prophets, and they've said some real wacky shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you consider yourself a prophet, I'm pretty much going to assume that everything you say after that is going to be wacky shit. You know?
Yeah. They consider themselves apostles and prophets. I'm not making this up.
I know. I believe you. I like the, what's that guy? Third Eagle of the Apocalypse. Is he one of
yes,
them?
Yes, yes, yes.
That guy's a lunatic. I can't remember his real name. I mean, where did
William
he come
Tapley?
Up with that name? William Tapley. Where did he even come up with that name? Third Eagle of the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
That sounds like.
Yeah.
It's like somebody who playing WoW would name their character the Third Eagle of the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know,
that guy, he put out a YouTube video saying that some sculpture at the Denver International Airport was sent by Satan because it's a phallic symbol.
Yes.
I find phallic symbols everywhere. I'm kind of like, yes. Maybe that's a personal problem there, man. Because I'm not really getting phallic symbol out of most of this.
Yeah. Well, and one person who was invited to speak at this event thinks that the Statue of Liberty is satanic. Because it was given to us by the French. So,
I was going to say, is that why? Because it was given to us by the French? Yeah.
Yes. So Satan clearly constructed it.
Right, because the French aren't Christian or anything.
Yeah. Well, I have to compliment Satan on his handiwork. That is a nice statue. Satan, if you're listening, thank you. America is grateful. Well, anyway. One guy saying that Oprah Winfrey was... even though she wasn't aware of it, she was Satan because she's not a good Christian and she leads people astray, which I think Oprah Winfrey is, when it comes to matters of science and medicine, is a moron, but I wouldn't go far as to say that she's Satan.
No, she's definitely a peddler of woo, and so I'm glad she's finally off the air, and man, I'm so pissed that though from her came Dr. Phil and was it Dr. Oz? That sham doctor.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, right. I haven't watched a Oprah show. Mike, you probably run into her all the time. You're in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. This is Oprah land. That's for sure. I also remember her, and it was a big craze a couple years ago. You guys probably remember. She promoted that book, The Secret, which is a bunch of New Age mumbo jumbo bullshit. You remember that, guys?
No, I don't, actually. Okay. I avoid all things Oprah for the most part.
Okay.
The only time I ever hear her name is when I'm listening to some sort of skeptic podcast or an article, and they bring her up.
Yeah.
I just remember her being embarrassed by the book that she promoted that was written by a guy who had supposedly been on drugs and kicked drugs, and they found out.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, wow, maybe you should, do a little bit of research before you endorse the book as Oprah.
Or before, maybe you should do some research before you advise people not to vaccinate your children.
Right.
You know? Speaking of which, God, I've been listening to the hell out of Brian Dunning's podcast.
Skeptoid?
Skeptoid! Oh, my God, I love that thing. I just recently caught on to it. And, just love that podcast.
Oh, I finished that thing off in like 3 days at work because I was like, I have to listen to them all.
Oh, that's the sad thing. They're only 10 minutes long. I've already listened to them all. So anyway, obviously, if you start talking about the satanic Statue of Liberty, next thing you know, you're talking about Oprah. Anyway, I can't remember. They're just... Everybody invited to speak at this event is an absolute lunatic. And I think we've mentioned some of the saner comments that these people have made. And that's what scares me about this prayer event, is that it really is going to be an event that's going to be promoting hatred, lack of tolerance, lack of diversity, and just scare tactics to scare these sheep into believing that in every shadow, there's a Satan is lurking, and we've got to be on guard, and that kind of bullshit.
Right, but unfortunately, this is a feather in the. This could be looked at as a feather in the cap for Perry because he has to appeal to the social conservatives or the evangelical fundamentalist Christians that make up the base of the Republican Party. And I'm not bashing the Republican Party or any, you know, I'm not trying to be political here, but that's true. They are a base of the Republican Party. And so this is a feather in the cap for him.
And normally I avoid politics, but when you're talking about the Tea Party anymore, we have to acknowledge it has been co-opted by right-wing Christian lunatics. It really has been. I'm not criticizing the economics. I don't necessarily agree with them, but that's not what we talk about here on this podcast.
Sure.
But this is not about economics anymore. This is not about curing the economic situation in this country. This is about conquering this country for Jesus.
Right.
In the most radical, right-wing, conservative manner possible. And yeah, so that's why I have no problems. I mean, if you're an atheist and you consider yourself a member of the Tea Party, I think you really have to do some soul searching, quote unquote. I just don't know how you reconcile that. I mean, there's a Libertarian Party. Become a libertarian.
Right. Yeah. And I have a lot of libertarian leanings. And the unfortunate thing about the Tea Party is that when it first started, at its very beginning, I really think it stood for a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. But as you've said, it's totally been taken over by the theocons. It's totally been taken over by the Christian right. And maybe if I was still a Christian, I could totally identify it. But since I've left the building, I mean, that's something I cannot associate with.
Yeah, it's been hijacked.
Yeah, I was going to say, I felt the same way. There were a lot of ideas that initially they had that I was like, these might actually be some really good ideas. And then when I heard the people that were speaking at their, even their very first rallies, I'm like, well, nope, that's not where I'm going to go.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and speaking of Tea Party candidates, possibly the top Tea Party candidate is Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota, don't you know? And, she has recently signed a pledge from this organization called the Family Leader Group, which is located in Iowa. That's a horrible name, Family Leader. But anyway, in this pledge, she promises to do whatever she can, assuming she gets elected as president, to preserve the heterosexual origins of marriage, make divorce more difficult, and I'd really love to see them flesh out what they mean by making divorce more difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
How are they going to make, what are they going to do to make divorce more difficult?
Probably give it a higher price tag. That's the only way I can think of in society now, is just make it more expensive.
To get a divorce in the first place?
Right.
I mean, I understand the value of maintaining a marriage in a family setting, but I also understand the advantage of having the marriage break up if it's just not working.
Right. I'm actually for actually telling kids, hey, don't get married at 18 and 20.
Exactly.
Why don't you wait until you're 30? Because the later you get married, it seems to be the longer or usually it tends to last, because you're not making decisions when you're not even a fully formed person as to who you're going to be with for the rest of your life.
And using condoms, because you're going to have premarital sex if you wait till you're 30. But statistics have shown that the group most likely to stay married are the people who wait till they're 30.
Right. Exactly. I believe it.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of statistics that show that. And the people most likely to get divorced are the people who do it around 18.
Right.
And the people who are doing it around 18 are usually doing it because of religious reasons. I'm assuming that. I can't fairly say that I've seen any statistics on that one, but I would say
it's a big pressure. I knew some people that got married that weren't necessarily religious, but it was definitely, there was definitely pressure from other people saying, well, if you're going to do this, you should, if you're going to move in with somebody, you should get married. And that's just kind of, yeah, there was a lot. There's definitely a lot of cultural pressure, even if you're not Christian, to get married if you're going to cohabitate, especially in the Midwest. It's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I'll just say this: back in my fundamentalist days, I was desperate to get married because that was the only way I could have sex.
Exactly. That's the point, and I think that's why so many people get married young, is because they don't want to go to hell for having sex, but they're going to have sex,
Right, exactly.
And it ends up, and that probably does more harm to families in this country than any other thing, is the high divorce rate among people who are getting married at such a young age and then having kids. I mean, I can't imagine being married and having a kid or two kids at the age of 18.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you, that would be a rough marriage. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it would be a struggle.
Oh, I think that's quite honestly why so many of them fail, because they get married extremely young, have children extremely young, and it's taking all of this stress, because having kids isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's still stress, and it's still a lot of work, and it's still a lot of financial responsibility, and it heaps all of this responsibility on top of people who, you know, don't, you know, not to say that you can't get a decent job right out of high school, but it's certainly not, you know, you're certainly not going to be able to get the same kinds of jobs you would if you are out of college or have been working for a while. So, you know, it's just heaping too much responsibility on you all of a sudden.
Yeah, you just don't have the maturity.
Right.
I mean, I know I didn't have the maturity when I was 18 year old I didn't have enough maturity to raise myself, let alone a kid.
Right.
Well, and I also have to take issue with her saying of preserving the heterosexual origins of marriage. I'm like, have anybody? I just always want to go. Now, granted, marriage has always been between a man and a woman, but I also want to study that, you know, and have people actually look at the fact that marriage has always been a legal contract. It's right. It's only been within the last maybe 100 years that people were actually getting married because they loved each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the definition of marriage has obviously changed. So why it has to have changed into getting married to someone you love and just stop there is ridiculous to me. It's like this definition can continue to change.
Yeah. Exactly. Didn't this pledge also include a ban on all pornography?
Well, I'm not sure if it was a pledge to ban pornography, but to protect children from pornography.
Okay.
Which I guess, I mean, I don't even know what does that mean? To make it illegal?
It means banning pornography.
Yeah, that's my guess is that's probably what it means. I don't think that's specifically what it says. But how does a person who cares about what the Constitution says go about banning pornography?
I have no idea. I guess that might mean they don't really care what the Constitution says then.
Yeah.
Well, there's reasonable things. I mean, there's plenty of reasonable things that business owners can do to keep, you know, pornography from children. You know, parents have access to parental controls with their computers. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can do, but you can't protect every person, every child, every moment of every day from maybe seeing a boob, you know. I mean, right. it's just not, you know, not to mention I don't quite frankly think that's healthy, but you know.
Yeah. And something that was considered rather controversial is this pledge apparently makes a comment about how the African American families were more stable under slave approving the South than it is now. And that's probably something they should have left out. That why would you even mention that? You know, that's I don't know. But she signed it. I don't know. I know there are other people who've refused to sign this, but this is the top dog in the Tea Party right now, Michelle Bachmann. I don't know if anyone even listens to Sarah Palin anymore, but she's certainly taken her spot. Who does listen to Sarah? Does anyone listen to Sarah Palin anymore on anything?
Well, I still think if she were to declare her candidacy, I think she would have quite a following. I don't see her as having a chance of winning the Republican nomination. I mean, so I say that because I still think she does have something resembling a following.
Mm-hmm. I just haven't heard. I think since Michelle Bachmann has kind of came along and become the top candidate in the Republican Party right now, that we've kind of forgotten about her. But anyway,
right.
But there we go. Someone who is clearly more interested in establishing Christian values in this country than ruling a secular nation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But that's just me. And speaking of Michelle Bachmann, you know, I haven't been sourcing these articles, by the way. This comes from, I cannot find it. Oh, thepoliticalwire.com. God caught backing multiple candidates. Thus far, God, according to the candidates, has endorsed Herman Cain, Rick Santorum, and Michelle Bachmann. Or at the very least, he encouraged them to run for the presidency.
Rick Perry, I think he implied recently that God is calling him to run. Did you mention? I don't know if you mentioned Perry. If you did, I apologize.
Well, he hasn't. He hasn't officially run yet. But is that what he said?
As of today, I thought I saw a quote from him that indicated that he felt he was being called from above to possibly run. But you're right. He has not made an official announcement, but his quote seems to indicate that his sky daddy is calling him into a presidential run.
Well, I always wonder how they rationalize it, because obviously, even if one of them wins, by definition, three of them have lost. I wonder how they rationalize the fact that God gave him really bad advice.
Yeah. Well, it's frustrating. I mean, this is an example of, and I don't know if I should call it an example. This should show Christians that the saying, oh, God is leading me to do this or God is leading me to do that, why can't people realize that that's just a way of saying, oh, I feel like I want to do this or I want to feel like I want to do that. God isn't saying shit to you.
But do they?
Well,
do
it
they?
Kind of makes me. I was going to say, it kind of makes me wonder if all the candidates say, God told me to run, and if, you know, since we can only have one winner, if you can then look at everybody and say, well, who was lying? You know, or was the guy that won lying, or was everybody else lying? You know?
Or I'd like to see, I'd like to see,
telling the truth.
I'd like to see it come up in a debate. Now, you know, the moderator asks, okay, who really heard from God on this one? Because certainly he would have no reason to invite you all to run for the presidency. Probably not going to happen.
As somebody would be the sacrificial lamb and say, well, that's because God always wins. So.
Or something. Well, and I wonder if they've come up with their excuses when they inevitably fail for why God called them and at the same time they lost. It's probably something along the lines, well, my candidacy helped direct the debate towards God's, you know, agenda. But it's like, well, it would have worked even better had you won. You know, it would have directed it that much better had you been victorious in this one. Yeah. So
the list of excuses for shit like that is endless. You know, they could say, oh, God was teaching me through this and God strengthened my faith, or, you know, all kinds of excuses for why God didn't do what he said he was going to do.
Mm-hmm. I don't get it. But anyway. All right. More wackiness from Texas. You know, we should, as a podcast, we have a lot to thank Texas for. And just Kansas probably used to be the state, and in many ways we still are. But Texas, when it comes to just crazy shit to talk about, Texas is a cornucopia of religious insanity. So I'd like to thank Texas for that personally. But anyway, the Texas Board of Education is going to re-examine the debate on evolution, and they're going to attempt to include intelligent design in their curriculum for their schools, their high schools. Of course, this, as we know, this is not motivated by their religious leanings at all. This is a purely secular effort.
I was just going to say, how many times do we have to take this to court till they get it through their heads? Intelligent design is not science.
Right.
Well, what I love, a new board woman, Barbara Cargill, a Republican, here's what she has to say about getting this changed. There are six true conservative Christians on the board, so now we have to fight for two other votes. She's already established that this is a religious issue.
She just revealed her intentions right there.
Which I don't know if she's going to catch any flack for it, but that's clearly what the motivation for this is, a purely religious effort.
That should be the first thing that you take into a court and say, here's her statement, mm-hmm, in print. Or the media, that this is what we need to do, so obviously it's religiously motivated. And I would think any court would look at that and go, you're absolutely right.
Well, and they're foolishly teaming up with the Discovery Institute, which I find a little stupid given how the Discovery Institute put their tail in between their legs and ran the last time this type of thing went to court. they refused to even tell. If you remember, at in Pennsylvania, they refused to even show up for that.
Yeah, I think it was out of 6 witnesses, only one showed up, and that was Michael Behe, and he got his butt handed to him on the stand.
And remarkably, he's still using those same arguments, even though they were humiliated. But here's what Stephen Sample, and I'm getting the story, by the way, from the Dallas News, Dallas Morning News, which I'm guessing is a newspaper in Dallas. Stephen Sample, president of the International Databases, who's part of this whole intelligent design thing, has this to say. "I'm not trying to bring the book of Genesis into science class," he said. "One of the reasons I decided to enter the bidding for these books was to give Texas students a fair and honest treatment of evolution. The scientific community is split on Darwin's theory, and my material reflects that." I'd like to see which survey of scientists he's referring to when he says it's split, because it's about the most unified
site. Right. I'm very ignorant on evolution, but I know that the evolution is believed by the a predominant percentage. I don't know if I'm making sense here. Most scientists believe in evolution. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, most scientists,
even the Christian ones.
Right.
Even
right,
the Christian
right.
ones.
But it gets better. When you poll the PhDs in the relevant sciences, like biology, chemistry, radiology, it's over 99%.
Yeah.
Consensus. Among the rest of the scientific community, which, sometimes includes people with master's degrees and engineers and who are considered scientists but not really in a field that involves evolution whatsoever, it's like 90% or something. I can't remember the exact statistic.
I believe it.
But among the PhDs in the relevant fields, it's 99%. That if you want to consider that 1% of creationist wackos that manage to get their PhD, I having split the scientific community, I don't know what the word means anymore.
But, that's just the wisdom of the world. That's the wisdom of men. We care what the Word of God says.
Yes. Well, I wish. And if he had said that, that would have been great. The Word of God is in disagreement with what science has to say. But the scientific community is not split on Darwin's theory. Again, there aren't a whole lot of theories out there that have more scientific consensus behind them.
And more evidence behind them.
Yes. But the thing is he can say stupid shit like that, and the average Texan and the average Kansan, most likely, is going to say, "That's right, it's split. Yeah. I heard there were 700 scientists who disagreed with evolution." And that's pretty much the mindset of the person for whom that comment was directed. Fascinating stuff. It will never end, and the horrifying thing is I suspect that their strategy is a wise one. Keep bringing it to court. Someday a judge will agree with them.
Probably.
Someday they're going to get that evangelical right-wing judge appointed by George W. Bush, and he's going to agree with them.
Yeah.
I don't know. The judge that ruled against them in the Dover case was a conservative.
I know, and that really, and the fact that he ruled against them shocked people. And what really shocked people is
his
vicious
response.
Yeah, he was absolutely vicious towards. But I really do believe that there's going to be that cretard judge out there that's going to thumbs up this thing, and it's eventually going to make its way to the Supreme Court, where I'm guessing it's going to get shot down.
I was going to say, even if it's a small judge that happens to, even as wacky as some judges can be, if you get to the level of the Supreme Court, you've got to be an intelligent person. So I just really seriously
right.
doubt that anybody
that's true.
It would get anywhere. It would get to the Supreme Court, and the same thing would happen no matter what judge you get.
Have you ever seen a trial before the Supreme Court? Clarence Thomas doesn't say a fucking word. He doesn't. Everybody's asking questions. I've watched several trials before the Supreme Court. They say it's been like 20 years since he's asked a question.
Wow.
So I don't think you necessarily have to be a genius.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, it is bizarre. But anyway, let's move on. New Gallup poll, and I'm reading. I got this off of the University of Missouri Skeptics blog.
And boo, Mizzou. Boo,
yeah, exactly. I'm a KU fan, not a grad, but I hate to read anything from the University of Missouri, but I will because it's kind of interesting, and I wanted to give them credit. I could have just gone to what they're referring to directly, but anyway, a new Gallup poll reveals stunning news that many Christians, and you guys sitting down, because you'll find this stunning. Uh-huh. Many Christians don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
What a shock.
Yes. Turns out that while 3 out of every 10 self-identifying Christians in the United States believe that the Bible is the literal word of God, 10% of Christians have actually read the Bible, which isn't even remotely shocking to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember back in my Fundy days, I was amazed at how many Christians didn't read the Bible and the amount of Christians who didn't read the Bible on a regular basis. I mean, I was in that thing all the time, and I, you know, in my self-righteous attitude, I expected everyone else to read the Bible as much as I did. But no, I mean, for all the hype that Christians have about the Bible, they sure don't read it a lot, and they really don't know shit about it, and so they don't know as much as they make themselves out to know about it. So
yes, but they are absolutely certain that it is the word of God,
right?
which Bart Ehrman gives this speech. I saw it on the internet where he asked his students to raise their hand if they believed that the Bible was the word of God, and almost all of them raised their hands. And then he asks his students, raise your hands if you've read the most recent Harry Potter book, and many of them raised their hands. Raise your hands if you read the Bible, and like one person raised their hands. And it's like, that should tell you something about right. What you really think about the Bible. Because if you thought the creator of the universe wrote this book, you probably would have really read it.
Right. Yeah. I remember being told that I need to read the Word of God because it's God's 66 love letters to you. That kind of sounds kind of creepy, but see, that's what I was told.
Some of them have a bit of a sadomasochistic side.
Right.
Love can hurt on some of those. Right. I've never heard anyone. That was your father who said that?
Oh, no. My dad isn't a Christian, but no, I mean, various leaders in the Christian community, a guy, but even a famous guy, he passed away, D. James Kennedy. He said he always made that analogy. The Word of God is the Bible is like 66 love letters from God right to you. Why wouldn't you want to read that?
That is creepy.
Yeah.
So it goes on to indicate that 50% of Americans couldn't even name one of the four Gospels, which is shocking to me. That really does shock me. I can't believe to not even be able to name one of them is pretty shocking.
You know, there was a not to be distracted. I just want to quickly say that a while back there was a poll, and I know polls aren't always reliable, but it seemed pretty accurate. The poll indicated that atheists and agnostics knew more about the Bible than Christians did.
Well, knew more about religion in general than Christians did. I think that was That was a Gallup poll as well, made quite a difference.
Thank you for the correction. Okay.
And that's really my experience. The people I know who know the most about religion are all atheists.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of truth to that. There was a poll done in the 90s which indicated that more Americans thought that the Sermon on the Mount was written by the evangelical preacher, I cannot remember his name.
Billy Graham,
than Jesus. More people thought Billy Graham gave the Sermon on the Mount than Jesus, which I thought was amazing. So, again, when Christians are preaching to you about their Jesus and everything, odds are they have no idea what they're talking about.
Right.
And they're basically just parroting something that they've heard elsewhere and talking about that feel-good experience that they get every single time they listen to Amazing Grace or something like that at church.
Yeah.
So, all right. This is my favorite story right here. This might be our last one. How long have we been doing this? So, all right. Image of Virgin Mary appears in bird droppings on area family's truck. And I absolutely love this. I don't know what area this is, but this comes from KWTX. I'm going to guess that's in Texas, Channel 10. And here it goes. I told my brothers to come over and see this, and they say this is the Virgin, Salvador Pachuca says. Some bird crapped on his truck, and it looked freakishly like the Virgin of Guadalupe. Crystal, I guess his wife, has this to say. We all feel protected. It's a blessing to our family. And everybody that comes to see it says so. That just amazes me how they can extrapolate bird crap to the heavenly protection. And according to the photo, it does. You can see this vague. Did I send you guys this?
Yes.
There is this vague image that you might confuse for the picture of the Virgin of Guadalupe. But you would think just by virtue of it, of the medium, that most people would be hesitant to claim that this was a Mary revealing herself to the public.
Isn't this a denigration of the Virgin Mary? I mean, it's not a flattering.
It has been before. It has been before when it, well, of course, this was made by human hands, but there was an exhibit once that was in New York that was a Virgin Mary that was created out of elephant dung. And it was an African American artist. I think she was African American. I'm not 100% sure on that. But the idea is that in Africa, elephant dung is kind of sacred because when they eat the food, they pass seeds and the seeds grow out of the dung. So it's considered like a rebirth type thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she made this Virgin Mary out of elephant dung, and people were so angry about it and saying, oh, this is, you know, defiling the Virgin and all this stuff. So why is it that one was that actually did have some meaning behind it and actually was meant as something positive, but a bird poops and it makes a vague outline of a painting. And I saw the actual picture, and it's like, yeah, it really doesn't look like anything but a blob of bird poop.
Yeah, it is a bit of a stretch to say that this looks like the Virgin of Guadalupe, and that's another thing. Nobody knows what Mary looks like. Right. You remember that grilled cheese sandwich?
Yeah.
It looked like Greta Garbo.
No one knows what Jesus looks like.
Yeah, but they know what his picture looks like if a bird shed on his car. I find this one of the more fascinating aspects of belief is that how they're basically willing to believe in just about anything is a miracle. Right. Now, they even go on to say that since this happened on the 12th, that couldn't be a coincidence because December 12th is the celebration day of the Virgin of Guadalupe. Of course, it wasn't December 12th. It was just 12th of June, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they're just grasping at straws.
Or July, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But hey, if this makes
because it's halfway between the year because you know
right
yeah.
And the interesting thing is, I guarantee they have not washed the poop off by now. That thing is on there for good. Yeah. So all right, we got time for one more. This one's kind of I got this one, Michael, off your. I just think this is hilarious. It's kind of morbid, but I got this off your Facebook page. Priest dies after trying to walk on water. A priest has died after trying to demonstrate how Jesus walked on water, and I'm getting this from, where am I getting this from? ReligiousNewsBlog.com. Evangelical preacher Frank Cabelli, 35, told his congregation that he could repeat the biblical miracle. One eyewitness says he told churchgoers he had had a revelation that if he had enough faith, he could walk on water like Jesus. He took his congregation to the beach, saying that he would walk across the Como estuary, which takes 20 minutes by boat. He walked into the water, which soon passed over his head and never came back.
Wow. Yeah. I'll say a few things. I mean, I take no pleasure in the fact that this guy died, you know, so I send my condolences to his congregation and his family. But, you know, obviously the guy was a nutcase, but, you know, I can sympathize with him in the sense of this. I mean, I would love for the world of the Bible to be real. I mean, the world of the Bible, we read about people walking on water, seas parting, talking donkeys, talking snakes. And the fact of the matter is that I see no more evidence that the world of the Bible is, I see no evidence that the Bible, the world of the Bible is any more real than the world of Harry Potter or the Green Lantern. I mean, you know, we see a supernatural world in the Bible, but in reality, the world really is pretty fucking natural. And this story is proof of this.
Well, yeah, the world of the Bible is basically just one never-ending Pixar movie.
Exactly.
You know? But what I love about this, well, first of all, he's got biblical support on this. The Bible really does indicate that if you have faith, you can do this. And the man clearly had faith.
Yeah. Right.
But, well, he, you know, and Peter got criticized for not having faith because he fell in the water.
Right. True.
The Bible is clear. You have faith. This is the type of stuff you should be able to do. And he clearly had faith.
Yeah.
He must have doubted. He must have had some doubt.
Well, I would like to say. At what point, if he started doubting, it was clearly after the water was over his head. Because he kept walking. That's the insane part. I mean, why, you know, it gets up to your hip. At that point, you say, okay, it's not working. I'm turning around. I'm going to apologize to everyone. Bringing him out here. This is embarrassing, but he kept going. I don't know what he expected to happen. It's just so bizarre to me.
And yeah, well, Jesus says, you shall do greater works than these.
And the congregation just stands there and watches while this guy drowns himself. Wow. You would think somebody would run out there and say, come on. The gig's up, dude. You know?
I was going to say, right. I think that's the more shocking part of the story to me, is the fact that they all just stood around and let him walk on right out there. I mean, you would think that somebody would have been like, yeah, we got to go get this guy.
Yeah, exactly. I would have been like, hey, Father, you know, come back. We'll tell everybody you did it. We'll cover for you. You know, this is not going well. You know, by the time it got up to your hip, that should have been a sign. This wasn't working. I don't know. I love this story. Certainly this guy is going to win the Darwin Award. Do they even still give the Darwin Award? I mean, clearly
they have to.
Clearly, this guy did not live a rational, logical, evidence-based life. Because, like I said, he would have turned around if he did. And
I really can sympathize with a guy as, you know, as batshit crazy as he was. I would love the world of the Bible to be reality. The things that happen. I mean, I'd love to see people healed of fatal diseases. But it just, you know, yeah. So I mean, on one hand, I think it's funny, but my heart goes out to this guy. Well, I mean, he's dead now, but my heart goes out to people who have this mindset. I mean, I feel sorry for them.
Well, I remember when I was still a Christian, I used to like try to move things with my mind, with faith.
Sure.
Just thinking, okay, it's not a mountain, but I am going to move that cup. I really did. And every single time I was disappointed by my lack of faith. Right. And I should have been disappointed by my lack of intelligence for thinking that it was going to work. So, I don't know. This it's morbid. It's horrible that I think this is funny, but I just think this is hilarious, and I should be ashamed of myself, and I'm going to hell.
I'm with you. I think it's pretty hilarious, too.
So, all right. Well, that's about all the time we have for this particular episode. I think we pretty much went through every story. No, we skipped a couple. But anyway, everybody, thanks for listening to another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. I believe Jennifer and I are... Next week, we're interviewing Dr. Daryl Ray about his sex survey.
Cool.
Which should be interesting. I love Dr. Daryl. And then later, Michael and I are going to record a show about whatever it was called again, that resurrection.
The minimal facts approach.
The minimal facts approach. We're going to kick its ass. Yeah. Literally. I built an effigy of it and everything. So, all right. Well, everyone, thanks for listening.